Yeah, solid. 2012 is a really good vintage. I think they're really nervous about it in the beginning, and then as the wines kind of got out of barrel and people started to review them, they were really good, and this is a really good example of a 2012.
Awesome. How about you, Kelly? How do you, your glass looks empty over there. You want a little bit more? Do you need it? People, Breaking Bread Napa, we're in Telluride. I told you, listeners, I was coming to Telluride, and it is so amazing here. It is so beautiful. I can't even believe that it's just so majestic. Just to give you a visual on what we're looking at here, this is a gold mining town from the 1800s, and it's actually, the town is actually surrounded by a box canyon. And the elevation, they have these soaring peaks surrounding the town. They're so beautiful, about 9,500 feet in altitude. Just breathtaking. And just to put it in perspective, if you all remember the Coors beer can, I'm literally like 100 yards away from that. Just to give you a little background on the town itself, as I said, it was in the 1800s. It was a gold mining town. It didn't start picking up to be a ski resort town until like the 1970s. And then it just really picked up from there. There a lot of influences came into town and built out a really nice ski range here. It's just, it's amazing. The skiing is just so beautiful. I've skied Colorado, all over Aspen, Beaver Creek, Copper Mountain, just did a lot of skiing in Colorado. Never been to Telluride. And then so wonderful. Some of my best friends bought a place here and are so wonderful to host us here every year. There's actually a big gay ski weekend here, and it's just so lively and just really wonderful. There's so many activities, and we'll go into a little bit about it's called TAB. It's a really good charity for the AIDS community, and then we'll get some background on that from some of our local guests to tell us a little bit about that. Just a little trivia, a little background. If you folks familiar with Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, about Paul Newman and Robert Redford, Butch Cassidy is an actual bank robber. I mean, so the movie was actually after him. So his first bank that he actually robbed was the San Miguel Valley Bank right here in Telluride. So just a little bit of trivia there. And him and his gang of three walked away with about $25,000 at the time. That was, in today's dollars, I think it's almost $1 million worth. So just really, just a really lot of culture and just so much fun in this town. So I'm excited. I've got two locals here. I've got a special guest here. So wonderful to meet some of the locals. We had some dinner parties and just so exciting. So I'm going to go around the table, and I want you to introduce yourself. Give us a little background. I'm going to start with you, Kelly.
Hey, everybody. So I'm Kelly Kramer. I'm a lawyer based in Washington, D.C., but I live here in Telluride, and I moved out here about 6 years ago. I'm sort of a local now. I suppose that counts. Happy to do this. It's going to be a good time.
All right. And over to you, Brian. Give us a little background about what you're doing here in Telluride.
My name is Brian Towns. I own the Mountain Village Wine Merchant in Mountain Village, Colorado. I moved to Telluride in 2005 from Alabama, got into wine, and I passed a couple sommelier exams and opened my own store about 3 years ago.
Awesome. Awesome. We're so excited to have you here.
Yeah.
And to hear a little bit more about the Napa wines that we're tasting today and get a little bit of your perspective on it. So it'll be really interesting. And over to you, Josh. Say hi to the listeners and give us a little bit background about you.
Yeah. Hey, listeners. And hey, Tyrene. Thanks for having me on. I'm Josh Davis. I live in Los Angeles and I work as a psychotherapist in private practice. I'm super excited to be here. I'm really good at drinking wine. I'm going to do my best to talk about it as good as I drink it.
Just what we like.
Yeah. And what a beautiful place to be, you know, hearing from the locals. I was walking around downtown today wishing I was a local. I was like, do I look like one? But anyway, but I'm done. Thank you.
Awesome. Awesome. Oh, and one other quick area too, in that Box Canyon where the town is, I forgot to mention it, the Bridal Veil Falls. It's just breathtaking. It's so beautiful. And there's some nice hiking up there. And I hear there's bears up there too. So
that's a truth.
So watch out. But we're going to dive in today's wine program. We're tasting, today's discussion is old versus new. So we're looking at a couple older wines, 2012 and a 2015. We're going to compare and contrast the 2012 and the 2015. And then we're going to taste some younger wines. We're going to taste a 2021 and a 2022 vintage. But before I kick off and tell you a little bit about the wines that we're tasting, I want to just talk about the vintages and what the weather conditions were like in Napa Valley. And it just so happens, and the reason why I picked the 2012 to start with, I had it in my wine cellar, but it was the first year that I bought my home in Napa Valley. And so it's really special to me. And I've been a big Nickel and Nickel fan, and it is a Nickel and Nickel. And I'll get into a little bit more composition as well, but just to set up the 2012 vintage and the conditions, it was really the first year of a very long, it was a decade of a drought in Napa Valley. So it was just the beginning, the first year. So they did get a consistent quality crop that year. And in a lot of the wines got many, many stars. Overall, it was a solid vintage across the board, marked by strong tannins, so that, you know, the aging process will really, really, really kick off for decades. We could literally have set this away for, you know, another decade at least, but just so excited to drink it and just get a taste of it. And I have some more in the cellar, so just nice to get a perspective on that particular vintage. And again, as I said, that wine is the 2012 Nickel and Nickel. And they do, if you're not familiar with the Nickel and Nickel, they're a single vineyard, which is what they do. They take a vineyard and that's it. They get the grapes out of that vineyard and they make that bottle of wine. So they're generally small productions, as you can imagine, coming out of one vineyard there. And this is from the Rutherford, so it's Floor Valley. In the Napa Valley area. It's probably midway up. It starts at, the town, and then it goes all the way up north to Calistoga. So it's probably about, Rutherford's probably about midway through the valley there. And it is a partner of Farniente. We do taste a lot of Farniente wines here in the past, and so it is one of their partnership wineries there. So I want to read the winemaker's tasting notes, and then I'm going to give my group here a chance to taste that first wine and see if we can identify some of those notes. So that you should touch on flavors of cherry, raspberry fruits combined with that, they call it Rutherford dust. It's in the soil, and it's really unique to that particular area in the Napa Valley. So you should pick up on that. So fruity, but yet you're going to taste that little bit of that dusty soil there. And then there's some additional notes maybe on the finish if you want to check those out. They're chocolate, spice, and they harmonize nicely with the fruit flavors. And the tannins are mild, and there's a long finish. So why don't we go around the table and see what your palates take. I'm going to go to Josh, and let us know how you're tasting this beautiful 2012.
Well, it's delicious. I think the thing that stands out the most was the long finish. And really, I can feel that. And when I'm drinking wine, I don't usually think that way. I'm always thinking about what's happening right away.
Up front.
Yeah, up front. So that long finish, I'm really understanding that, like what that can feel like.
You know? Perfect. Brian, over to you. And what do you pick up on that?
Yeah, there's still a lot of fruit present. You know, when wines get older, the fruit kind of dissipates, that kind of thing. But this is still a young, lively, you know, get a lot of cherry and raspberries, like black cherry. You know, and a lot of the Rutherford dust, a lot of times refers to the tannin. You know, it's kind of a dusty, kind of gritty tannin, but really satisfying. And the finish is really long. I always think that's a really good indicator of a quality of wine. You can taste it 60 seconds later. Generally, even if it's young, it's like, oh, wow, there's something here because there's a lot going on and you're still taste it. So Yeah, solid. 2012 was a really good vintage. I think they were really nervous about it in the beginning. And then as the wines kind of got out of barrel and people started to review them, they were really good. And this is a really good example of a 2012.
Awesome. How about you, Kelly? How do you, your glass looks empty over there. You want a little bit more? Do you need it?
There's got to catch on. There's a ton of fruit. That's the first thing that you taste as soon as you start to, even you can smell it actually. And as you taste it, it's the berries are really pronounced. The finish is really long, chills out. It just kind of like hangs on for quite a while there. I'm not picking up the dust. That's not, I'm missing that.
Do you have like a dry your palate a little bit?
I mean, a tiny bit, but there's nothing like, I wouldn't say anything gritty or dusty about it. Okay. I think it's just a different, you know, you can taste that. There's a little bit of tannin going on, but not anything that I would say is dusty.
Yep. Okay. Well, great. Everybody's palate is different. So there's no wrong answers there, people. It's all about your own adventure there with the wine. All right, so we're going to move on to the 2015 vintage. So now this is the fourth year of Napa's drought decade in a row. There was definitely a cold spell early in spring that drove the yields very low. However, the quality is super high in the 2015 vintage. And the harvest started early in August, which, you know, usually harvest is September and October typically. But because it was a drought year, significant drought year, it really, you know, forced the winemakers to pick early. So what we're tasting here is a 2015 Silver Oak. And just to change it up a little bit, I threw in an Alexander Valley. So not Napa Valley, this is Alexander Valley, which is a little further west, northwest of the Napa Valley. It's just kind of parallel to the Napa Valley. But this, actually, a little story here is that this was the, when I first went to Napa Valley, it was, probably now going on 25, 30 years ago, Silver Oak was my first winery I ever had my first tasting at. So this is really special to me. And I love these guys who started this vineyard. It was a couple of guys on a handshake. They started the vineyard. It was Ray Toomey and Justin Mayer. And their goal was to produce a cab that is aged, and they're known for American oak. That's what they really specialize. And you really can taste the difference between American and French. I didn't know, but I sat through some blind tastings, and it's just so pronounced. You know, I can pick that silver oak out anywhere. So it's unique to silver oak. So, you know, think about that when you guys are tasting that. And again, these wines can cellar for decades, definitely. Just to give you a little composition on this particular bottle, 95% cab, that means the grapes are 95% Cabernet Sauvignon, 3.7% are Merlot, and 0.4% Petit Verdot, and a little tiny bit of Malbec and Cab Franc in there. So it's really, you know, you could tell the winemakers really, you know, trying to mix that up a little bit and get some different notes on there. And according to the winemaker, we should smell aromas of black currants, baking spices, including notes of vanilla and coconut. And it's got a really consistent, tight, lingering finish. So tasters, let's dive in and see.
I definitely the baking spices, for sure, and the coconut.
Yeah, that's American oak. There's dill. There's always a dill.
Got a little bit of dill too. Yeah,
yeah, the American oak. They use it a ton in Rioja as well.
Oh, so is that right? Yeah, mm-hmm. I didn't know that.
So Tempranillo likes American oak, but I think that is a flagship of silver oak, and really, yeah, stands out.
Vanilla jumps out for me. It's sort of pronounced, not in the first, but as you sort of let it sit there for a second, mm-hmm. you can pick up the flavor.
Mm-hmm. And now let me ask you, what do you got? I mean, this is all degrees of greatness. I mean, these are some really solid wines here, but which one do you prefer over the 2012 or the 2015? Which one do you prefer? That your 2012 is empty, that glass. So yeah, I don't know. Right, that, so. that might
Hey, mine too. Mine's empty. Also, I really liked the 2012.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
I did too. I thought the 2012 just and I think it's just like a little bit of a stylistic thing, but the 2012 just brought was like a little bit of a fuller wine in my opinion.
How about you, Brian? Which one do you prefer?
I prefer the 2012. Yeah? I think it's just overall balance. I think the 2015 is very good. I do feel like the oak, the American oak, can sometimes overpower, or, you know, it might take a little more time to kind of overcome some of the nuances, the vanilla and that kind of thing. I feel like the 2012 is more balanced.
Okay.
But they're both very good ones.
Again, it's degrees of greatness here. How about you, Josh? Yeah. You going with 2012?
Yeah, I am. And just to ask you guys too, you feel like the 2012 is just has more of that fruit taste to it on the front, right? Am I getting that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Definitely.
A lot of fruit.
Definitely the first taste.
And so less on the second.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
And it's interesting, Brian, you made a good comment about that. Is as the wine ages, you lose that fruity. But this is really still pretty fruity, and the wine is over 10 years old. Yeah. So it's pretty remarkable, actually.
For sure.
I mean,
yeah, I think in 10 more years, different wine.
100%. Yeah. Absolutely.
Hey, Ty, I've got a question for you.
Absolutely.
You mentioned that this 2015 was in the fourth year of a drought. Does it matter if it's a prolonged drought? Like, what does it do to the wine over time?
Well, it really comes down to, I would say, production levels. You know, if I mean, you're going to get more smaller crops, but they're usually more rich and intense there. So, I mean, and that's really what, you know, drives some of the qualities of the wine. You know, it's like, but you're not going to get an abundance, you know, it's not going to be an abundance of production. You're going to get smaller, but better, higher quality typically. I don't know, Brian, what do you think about that?
Well, roots have to go deeper. So in a drought,
the grapes.
So the grape will have to go deeper to find water. But the idea of stressing the vineyard and not giving it water also, you know, like you said, kind of makes a smaller crop, but the crop it produces is of higher quality.
The concentration of the fruits really, really gets more pronounced as it gets stressed from the lack of water.
Does it matter, like, the fact that it happens year over year over year, or is it just like whatever? Each season basically kind of dictates the quality.
Each season. But I mean, California in Napa has been in a drought. We were in a drought for 10 years. We just came out of it the last couple of years. So these wines are really drinking really nice in that drought phase. So definitely. Excellent question. Anything else to add, Brian?
No. Curious to, I don't know, Brand. I know every wine here except for the next one. So I'm excited to, well, this is your backyard.
Yeah. Absolutely. Right up the road. Actually, where you go running up that road. Yeah. Where the bobcats were chasing you.
It's wines and it's like a whole, like a menagerie of animals.
Okay. All right. So we're moving on to the young now. So we're going to taste the 2021 Brandelin Estate, Mount Veeder. And I live, my house is actually at the foothills of the Brandelin Estate on Mount Veeder. So it's right there. It started actually in the 1870s. The family first planted the first estate was in 1926. And everybody in the valley was like, you're crazy, you know, being on the mountain. So this is mountain fruit. Again, different. We were tasting valley floor fruit. Now we're going into mountain fruit here. So definitely a much more challenging, rugged terroir that gives the soil a flavor of granite along with the mountain fruits that, you know, is Napa's longest growing season in this particular area. So the composition of the 2021 Brandelin Estate is made up of 89% Cabernet Sauvignon grapes, 2% Petit Verdot, and 9% Cab Franc. So let's give it a little swirl and a smell. According to the winemaker, we should smell hints of violets, blackcurrant, and blackberry. And then on the palate, you should taste some really strong black and blue fruits along with notes of black tea, black plum, mocha, and a touch of minerality of slate. So let's see what we can find on her. Again, you know, no palates are wrong. It's what you can get out of that.
Definitely different tastes a lot different than the first two, I think. And that minerality, that stands out right away.
Mid-palate? I'm getting that mid-palate, that minerality in the mid-palate.
There was something on the nose I was trying to figure out. It reminded me of something. Got to think about it.
I got to confess, I don't know what violets smell like.
What do you smell? What do you smell?
It's interesting. I don't think that the smell is as pronounced as the last two ones that we just tried. I think it's a little more subtle. I think you do have like the blueberry, blackberry kind of purple fruit phenomenon happening. The minerality is the thing that's more distinctive. It's if you could describe the first two, like there's a good number of similarities. This feels quite different to me. I think mostly because of the minerality and the flavor profile, I guess, is tiny little bit as different as well. It just doesn't taste quite as maybe deep as the first two did.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree. I like that you said that. It doesn't taste quite as deep.
I think it seems like it's closed down a little bit. I mean,
mm-hmm. A shorter finish, or is when you mean by closed down?
I just mean that I think as it ages, it'll kind of come around. I feel like it's kind of, it's giving up a little bit, but it's not like in its full, it's not sprinting right now. It's kind of,
Again, that great point, because it's old versus younger. So this is a 21.
Sure.
So yes. It needs more time.
I think so. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I definitely get the violets. I feel like with the mountain fruits, like Mount Veeder and Diamond Mountain or Howell Mountain, you kind of get this blue fruit that's a little bit different than the Valley Floor. And I definitely am picking up on that. But it's really nice. I think it's good. It's balanced. But it's not aromatically, I feel like it's not soaring. It's kind of, I think 5 or 6 years down the road.
It needs a little bit more time.
It'll open up a little
totally
more.
Totally drinkable right now.
Totally.
We're
going to
enjoy it.
It's very good.
But it needs that more time. But again, we're trying to see old versus new. So
thinking about it, the cherries and raspberries that you could taste in the first two are a little bit missing here. Like it's just not that, it's not, the flavor profile is notably different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, getting more currant and some tea, some like black tea notes. But it's really good. A lot of complexity.
All right. Are we ready to go to the 2022, the Odette?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. This is one of my favorite vineyards in all of the Valley. I've been a member of this over a decade now, and it's the Plumpjack family. So they started with the Plumpjack wine labor, and we've tasted this on previous shows. So this is their Odette Estate wine. It's in the Stag's Leap District, so it's right off of Silverado Trail. Silverado runs parallel to the Napa Valley Road that runs up Highway 29 through the valley, so it's just parallel just right to the east of the 29 road that cuts through the valley. And it's probably, it's a little bit sooner than Rutherford. It's definitely probably, I'm going to say 5 or 10 miles north of the Napa town. So it's one of the first districts that starts on the Silverado trail there. The composition of this wine is 86% Cab Sauv, 11% Merlot, and 3% Malbec. And just to give you an idea of the production, there's only 2,752 cases made of this. So it's not a huge production. It's very small. But this is really, truly one of my favorite wines of the valley here. And according to the winemaker, you should be tasting notes of these fresh baked cinnamon rolls and blueberry pancakes. On the palate, juicy raspberry with candied walnuts, with a real fine, grainy tannins on the finish there. Very juicy, mouth-watering finish of vanilla and toasted oak and cacao. So, I mean, a lot going on there, but let's give it a taste, a smell, and see what the tasters think about it.
I agree on the nose. It's almost like potpourri in a way. There's just a lot of raspberry, cinnamon. Yeah. Baked cinnamon rolls, some blueberries, blackberries. Yeah. A lot going on.
Awesome. How about you, Kelly? What do you taste and smell?
So the word in the tasting notes, juicy. It's like a juice bomb. There's a lot of flavor going on here. It's funny. It's actually, it kind of evokes a little bit more of the 2012 that we had before. It's a little bit more of that fruitiness to me. I wonder if that's just the altitude, sort of like the where the grapes are grown. But like it's really interesting. I'm not as good as Brian. I can't pick up the cinnamon, but I smell the blueberry pancakes are what like that note. That's the note that like sort of picked out for me.
Awesome. How about you, Josh?
I agree with Kelly. Like there was something about as I was drinking this wine and trying it, it reminded me of the 2012.
Sure.
And I was like, oh, you know, which one am I going to like better? Trying to pick the one I like the best, but these feel very similar. And I can see why this is one of your favorites, Irene.
Yeah, super drinkable. Really, mm-hmm. really like, and it's like the kind of thing, like if you have a glass of wine, right? Like you're going to come home and you're going to like have one or two. You're like,
This is the one. This is the go-to bottle that you want. Absolutely. And it's interesting, Kelly, that you said that about the comparison with the 2012. So that's, it sounds like you like Valley Floor. That's Valley Floor wines.
Yeah, exactly right. Mm-hmm, and you know, it's, I think it's just the flavor profile, right? It's just like the fruit, it's subtle, but like the fruitiness in this, I'm not sure they get the same cherry on this one, but like you get like the, just like a more fruit forward kind of profile when you taste it. This does not have the finish that the 2012 had. 2012, like you could just sort of, you know, kind of hang
it
out.
It lingers. Exactly. It lingers.
Yeah, totally.
This is a little quicker.
Yeah. Sure. And that might be the age difference. I'm sure this will probably give us a little bit, right?
As wines get older, that's something that the length extends as far as
the finish.
The finish goes. Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure. So I think this is a very young wine. But, you know, I mean, it's also a difference in district. Stag's Leap
versus Rutherford.
But,
but Valley Floor, though.
Valley Floor, but those AVAs came back a long time ago. You know, I mean, there's a bunch of new ones coming up, but Stag's Leap and Rutherford were some of the first. So
100%. Yeah. Those are my faves. Totally my faves. If you're going to Napa Valley and you're only going for 2-3 days there, that's where you want to focus your time. There's some really amazing vineyards in that area. And you can certainly look on the website. You know, we're going to have all the tasting notes on the website. And, you know, when you do make that journey to Napa Valley, which I highly recommend everybody at least once should make it there. I mean, we're so proud. You know, I am so proud of California and, you know, our wine region there. I think it's just special. It's amazing. And I think it stands up to the old world wines 100%. Sure. I mean, they're doing some really good things there in the valley.
I got a question for you.
Sure. So,
like the oakage on this, is the 2012 and this, are they similar in terms of how they're manufactured? Brian, do you know anything about like how they made this wine?
The vinification, I do know that Odette, I hate to say it, but sometimes when you look at all these wines, cost does come into effect.
Of course.
I mean, nickel is outstanding and probably in that, you know, retail is 100, 120. I'm pretty sure the Odette is in that 200, you know, dollar
It is the highest point one here. Yeah.
Yeah. And a lot of times that is indicative of oak's expensive, you know, really like high end French oak that they use in Bordeaux and they use in Napa, you know, the little barrels, I mean, and they use them once, you know, it's like brand new oak, which I think Odette is doing.
And then they resell them.
They might put them in some of their lesser wines, reuse them. They're super valuable.
Super valuable. Yeah. I think one of them is like one barrel is like $1,500 or.
Oh, some of them are $15,000.
Oh, are you? Wow. Okay. Yeah. Well, holy cow.
Some of them get up
depending
there.
On where they're from.
A barrel of wine or just the barrel?
Just the barrel.
To put the so that's why you're paying that $150 for that bottle of wine, barrel.
I'm not 100% sure on this one, but I would say I think Odette uses a fair amount of oak and expensive wine. It's French. Oh, yeah, it's French oak.
100%. Sure. Yeah.
And, you know, and that's an interesting thing, too, is when you go back and taste the silver oak, you can really taste the difference in oak, you know. Because the American oak has the coconut, vanilla, all those things. The French oak, to me, is actually kind of a little sexier in a way. But good wines.
Definitely. So, listeners, what I'd like to do with my guests here, with my tasters here, I want to go around. What was your favorite wine? and also our first wine experience. So if you can just share with the listeners the first time you were introduced, you started your wine journey. You know, I was like 8 to 10 years old. My grandfather's Italian, and him and his buddy, they grew, I don't even know what kind of grapes they were, but we had this big gray green jug, Sunday pasta dinner, and the jug would come on the table. And that was my first wine experience. And it was wonderful because it was that family sharing that time, and it was just fun. And we were so sophisticated. We had the wine, and it was so fun and wonderful. So if you can share, you know, your first wine experience, that would be wonderful. Yeah. So, Josh, can you tell us which wine you like the best, why, and if you could share a little story about your first, when you started your wine journey?
You know, I'm between that 2022 and the 2012. I can't decide.
Wow. Okay.
The first and the last.
Okay.
If I'm going to pick, I'm going to choose the first one. Tasted. That would be
the 2012 Nickel and Nickel. That gets your vote. Okay.
I really enjoyed it. You know, my first wine experience is kind of embarrassing.
Please share.
My family didn't drink, really. So any sort of exposure to alcohol was friends. And I was quite young. And I think Boone's Farm. Is that even a wine?
Strawberry
Hill.
So it's alcohol. But as you grow up and you meet people and get out in the world and they know wine and they expose you to what they're drinking and you know you have experiences like this where you're talking about it. You know, obviously things change.
Of course.
Yeah, and I just amazing memories with you in Napa and learning so much more about wine. And I've learned a few things today, too, with you guys. So that's what I got there.
Awesome. Thanks for sharing, Josh. How about you, Brian? What can you, which one did you like and why? And then if you could share with the listeners, your first wine experience would be awesome.
Yeah. Okay. I liked the 2012 Nickel and Nickel as
okay.
well. I just thought it was in a really good place. It was really balanced. Really reminded me of Napa. You know, I mean, Napa's a warm place, so they're fruit forward wines, but this in a really good way. And I think, you know, with the age it had on it, it was really balanced and really delicious. And has some longevity. You know, it's not, I wouldn't call it an old wine. I'd say it's, you know, in a really good spot right now. Let's see. I'm sure I have a few. I mean, growing up, we always had wine around the table. My dad loved to cook. But I think one of the first wines, I was in college at the University of Alabama. There's a restaurant there called De Palma's. It's still there. It's this great old Italian
steakhouse or Italian.
It's Italian.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And, they have pizzas and pasta and, but it's fun. It's good. And, it's on a date. I was young. I was like 18 or 19. But I remember the wine. It was a Zanato Rapasa. So, Zanato is in the Veneto, is a Valpolicella,
Italian, huh?
Italian. Yeah.
All right.
Uh-huh. And a Rapasa. So, that was the first one where I'd like, ooh, this
it
was
rocked your world.
This
there
was really
go.
Good. And then I started kind of paying attention more to what I was drinking.
And that started your journey.
I think so.
Yeah.
We went to Shannon to Pop a few years after that. And that was one of my big wine trips that.
Oh, so you went to France.
Went to France. Yeah.
Oh,
and,
wow.
That was really eye opening seeing. Shannon to Pop is still one of my favorite ones. Really cool region. But that was kind of the first one.
Are you familiar with the Fiala brothers? They have a little winery in Napa Valley. They studied there at that winery that they spent so many years there.
Fiala,
exactly.
Aaron Jordan?
I seen the Chardonnay in your store, actually.
Yeah.
I noticed that. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But they do Pinot.
Yeah, they do Chardonnay Pinot. Yeah.
Do you have Pinot in your store?
We do.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So it's they were studied at that.
Oh, really? Yeah. Mm-hmm. I know Aaron Jordan a little bit. I've met him a few times.
Oh,
he's a good guy.
Okay. There you go. Awesome.
Great wines. Great winemaker. Yeah.
Totally. Mm-hmm. One of my favorite small production.
Oh, totally.
Good stuff. All right, Kelly, let's bring us home here. What was your favorite wine out of the bunch here? Why? And share a little bit of your first, when you started your wine journey.
Okay, so I'm going to take those questions, but I'm going to first do a plug for Brian.
Okay,
I have to say,
please.
Like, if anybody's coming to Telluride, like, you have to go up to the Mountain Village. It's a little bit, maybe a little bit tiny out of your way, but it's definitely the place to go if you want to get some good wines and you want to get somebody who knows what they're talking about.
Really appreciate that.
All right, so that's that. Second, which wine did I like the best? I think, unlike Josh, it's a little bit of a coin flip between the 2012 and the 2022, but I'm going to go with the 2022 Odette.
Cool.
Well, all right.
You could argue. You could definitely argue the 2012 is the better wine, right? And it's maybe the better wine at this moment in time, but I bet that Odette in 4, 5, 10 years is going to be a fabulous wine. And so I'm going to give it the benefit of the doubt because we've already got two of the 2012s, so we'll let that go. Yeah, so I'll spare you my actual first wines experiences because they end with bad outcomes. But I was in law school and I was in Philadelphia and I went to a wine store in Camden, New Jersey, which no one would ever think would be a destination for a wine store. It was like, I think it was called the Catacombs. I don't know if it's still there anymore. But they had a like an underground like storage facility. I went down and I bought like a 1986 Rioja. And this is like, you know, I was like, whatever. It was like a 10, 11-year-old wine at the time. And I brought it back and poured it. And it was like revelatory. It was like whatever I had before, whether it was Boone Farm or whatever else, whatever the label was. It was like, this is not really wine. This is a whole different ballgame. There's tons of sediment at the end of it. Like, it was like, it was a little bit like a, like as an inexperienced wine drinker, it wasn't the easiest thing to sort of like manage all of that. But like the experience was like, this is fabulous and interesting in a way that like I hadn't encountered with, you know, Natty Light.
Wow.
Natty Light. Nice and tea.
Yeah,
exactly. Super light.
All right. Guess any final comments about the wines or anything you'd
well,
like
didn't,
to?
You didn't tell us what your favorite was.
Oh, of course, of course. Right? You know what? I'm exactly like you. I'm torn between the 2012 and the 2022, and I know both wines very, very well. I'm going to go with the 2012. I got to go with the 2012. I know that the 22 is going to age amazingly in the next 4 or 5 years, but today, tonight, in this Telluride right now, magical place, I'm going with the 2012 Nickel and Nickel. Just put it right there. Beautiful.
There you have it. 3-1.
That's it.
We got a winner.
That's it. All right. All right, listeners, thank you so much. And I'd like to pay thanks to my guest tasters here. You guys were awesome. Thank you, Brian, shout out for Brian and Mountain Village Winery. If you come to Telluride, it's definitely a place you got to stop at. You will get whatever you want. You don't have to carry your wine all the way from wherever you're coming from to visit Telluride to ski season. He's got it all right there. Just amazing collection of wines. Thank you so much, gentlemen, for sharing your tasting notes with us and for sharing your first wine journey experience. Really loved that. Thank you so much. I really appreciate your
awesome.
Time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Tyrene.